listening to CMDA Matters, the weekly podcast of Christian Medical and Dental Associations. Here's your host, Dr. Mike Chubb.
Welcome, friends, to CMDA Matters, where every week we explore the issues that matter most to Christian healthcare professionals. Whether you're in healthcare, married or otherwise related to a healthcare professional, or simply interested in how God is working through Christ followers in patient care and beyond, I'm so glad you're here. Pastor Burt Jones is our Vice President of Missions and Member Care at CMDA. He's joining me today alongside our guest, Reverend Patrick Rieke, for an important conversation about burnout, which is a persistent thorn in the lives of so many healthcare professionals, even Christ followers, one that can be challenging and overwhelming to manage. Patrick is a healthcare director, an ethics leader, and a published author as well as speaker and coach. Having personally walked through the depths of burnout, Patrick now dedicates his work to raising the awareness and offering practical solutions for burnout prevention and recovery. With a background as a former pastor and church planter, and a decade-long role as the Director of Dignity and Spiritual Care at a large healthcare system in northern Indiana, Patrick brings invaluable insight to this crucial issue. If you are tired or cynical or just simply wondering how to keep going, friends, this conversation is for you. Today, I want to welcome to the microphone Pastor Burt Jones, who's our Vice President of Missions and Member Care, who's been a pastor for many years in your career. And so well-being of parishioners and now healthcare professionals has been a big part of your emphasis.
Big passion.
Recently, we did a survey with the Adventist Health System in Florida, 500 of our members.
Yeah.
Looking at, trying to look at well-being and how faith has an impact on that well-being. Can you remind me what the results of that 500-member survey were?
Yeah, we discovered that it was been well known for a long time that faith played a role in well-being. But in our members, three particular things, the outcome, calling, virtue, and
belonging
was the third one. And so we've been fascinated by these results and a lot of studies going into it and some articles getting ready to come out that our listeners will get a chance to hear. But those are fascinating to me.
At the heart of this whole well-being discussion and your responsibilities is a topic of burnout, which just continues to expand and increase. And our guest today has talked about the silent epidemic, has written a book, Let's Talk About Healthcare Burnout, a Prevention and Recovery Guidebook. Welcome to CMDA Matters, Patrick Rieke, today.
Thanks, Bert. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate being here.
Well, you've been involved in a very large healthcare system, I believe doing chaplaincy work, and also chair of a large ethics committee that was very engaged in helping your staff. But you also experienced, bumped up against your own burnout in your career. Can you share with our listeners your story and the moment when you realized, Patrick, that something had to change and what led up to that point?
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that gently, Mike. Bumped up against my own burnout. I've described it more as a crashing into burnout. And I think that's an experience that's pretty common. Yeah. So, you know, the way I want to start is I got into chaplaincy and then quickly ended up being the leader of multiple departments in the hospital. And like you said, Mike, leading the ethics committee. So I loved it. I really loved it. I had been in ministry and churches for years before that, and I loved that as well. But healthcare was just a good fit for me. You know, to see the meaning that we were making, I was never very good at the hallway conversations. Bert and I've talked about this, you know, having the hallway conversation on Sunday morning and the, hi, how are you doing? You know, sort of that surface level conversation that happens sometimes. You get, you know, as a part of the repertoire when you're in church ministry, I was always better in ministry at the going to the hospital or having the serious conversation or the crisis. So when I moved over into healthcare, that was pretty much all it was. You know, that's all it is having those crisis conversations. So then ended up leading the team. We had a large team of chaplains, about 20 paid chaplains, led our advanced care planning department, our hospital volunteer department, where we had about 600 volunteers, and a couple other things, and then the ethics committee. So in that role, I just loved it. You know, we had all sorts of opportunities with the community too. I know Bert participated a little bit in, we had some clergy initiatives where we were able to bring local clergy together to build more community among the faith community here in our region. And I loved that. It felt as though I really was living my calling, that I was doing the thing that I was called to do, that I was intended for in this world. And then, you know, I looking back now, I realize my boundaries were not fantastic. As an example of that, I took phone calls. You know, I was a 24/7 on-call leader for pretty much the whole 10 and a half years that I was in healthcare. This is pretty common for people in healthcare, especially in leadership or providers that have to be called in. But it takes its toll, you know, after a while. And so there was, I can visually remember standing at a distance from my kids' rugby matches, you know, trying to see what was going on while I'm on the phone over the weekend with somebody that I'm supporting, or actually informal meetings on the weekend and off hours. I think probably the most embarrassing example, and when I tell this in front of groups at my keynotes, I usually get a disgusted gasp, which doesn't exactly help my ego, but I answered the phone on our first trip to Disney World. Our family was at Disney. Phone rang. It was a work coworker, and I answered that phone. And I think, you know, part of that story demonstrates the both and, right? Like the job is demanding, and also, you know, I was making choices that I shouldn't have been making. I should have been setting up some better boundaries. So that was sort of the background coming into the pandemic. And then of course, the pandemic just ramped everything up to a different degree. So our chaplaincy team responded to every patient death in the hospital. And that was not new. Chaplains have been doing that for 60 years. But when we got to the pandemic, our volume, as you'll remember, every hospital was full into the rafters. Ours was no exception. Literally, you know, turning hallways and lobbies into patient rooms where patients were being taken care of. And we've been used to, you know, if we had 9 patients die in our health system on a day, that was, you know, almost front page news for our department that we had 9 deaths that day. Well, during the pandemic, we got to months where we averaged 9 or 10 deaths every single day during those months. We had days when we had 15 patients that died, you know, and it was just a different time. Things were, it was a different experience. And so we've got our team seemed large to have 20 chaplains responding to patient deaths is a real privilege. There's not a lot of healthcare systems that have that many chaplains, but all of a sudden our team seemed really, really small, you know, to try to respond to all of those deaths. And so that weighed heavily on the team. And then for me as their leader, of course, weighed heavily. 2 other factors that really led me into burnout. One was leading the ethics side of everything. You know, medical ethics is complicated in the best of times. And then when you enter into a pandemic, it's much more complicated. So I led the team, you know, that wrote the policies on what are we going to do if we've only got 1 ventilator left and there's 2 patients that need that, and trying to justify, you know, our rationale of how we're making those decisions. And then I think the third thing that led me into burnout, well, I know the third thing that led me into burnout was for 7.5 years, 8 years, almost 9 years, I had really supportive leaders in healthcare. And then I had a new leader in the middle of the pandemic who was a nice guy, actually a Christian brother. Really like him as a person, but his leadership skills and his support were lacking during that time, you know, for me and for my team. So by contrast, I think the way that I can express that the best is while we're doing, you know, what I've just described, the 24/7 in the hospital responding to all these patient deaths, he took a year that he did not come to the hospital one single time. He worked from home, which a lot of people did. And in fact, we were asked to, right? A lot of us were asked to. So he had reasons for making that decision, but the contrast there of never seeing my leader in person, him not having any of the same experience that we were having. And then a lot of other ways that, you know, we've all had that leader that doesn't respond to our emails or doesn't sign off on our paperwork, you know, that sort of thing. And that, I think, it would have been easier to bear during a different time, but on the backside of the pandemic was pretty difficult. So that all led up to the way that you described, Mike, me bumping into burnout was the fall of 2022. I woke up on my birthday, on Labor Day that fall, and I knew something was wrong physically in my body. Something was new, something was different. Even before my feet hit the floor, I knew something was wrong. But I'm not a medical person, so, you know, I was kind of trying to figure out what it was. We went to lunch, and we went to Casa Grande Mexican Grill down here on DuPont Road and had a great, great Mexican meal for lunch. And I got back home, and I'd been wearing a smartwatch, and my smartwatch sent an alert that I'd never seen before saying that I may be experiencing AFib. So that point, couldn't really deny it anymore. Went into the hospital, in my hospital, you know, so I'm used to going in and going up to the fourth floor to my office. This time I'm going in as a patient on the first floor in the ER. Told my doc, you know, hey, my watch diagnosed me. You know, doctors love it when you tell them their job's not necessary. You know, my watch already diagnosed me. And he said, well, we'll see. And hooked me up, of course, to all the necessary machines and said, yeah, your heart's in a persistent, irregular heart rhythm. And so he said, what we do for people like you is we cardiovert you. And, you know, again, I describe myself as healthcare adjacent. So it sounded familiar, but I didn't know exactly what it was. I said, what does that mean? He said, we're going to shock you. And, you know, I'm awake. I'm not having a heart attack. I'm not in any pain. I feel like myself other than being able to tell my heart's out of rhythm. And I said, you're joking, right? Because he knew who I was, you know, as a leader. I was usually down there in a suit and tie, you know, I'm on stages, that sort of thing. So I thought he was just giving me a hard time, but he had no sense of humor. He's like, nope, no, we're not kidding. This is what we're going to do. So usually we sedate our patients and then cardiovert you. And I said, well, do I have to be sedated? And he said, well, I think you want to be, you don't want to remember, you know, being kicked in the chest by a horse. And I said, well, I pulled out one of my big words I did know medically. I said, is it contraindicated if I decline sedation? And he said, well, no, if anything, you'll get out of here a little quicker. And so a lot of conversation. The end of the story was I decided to take that cardioversion without sedation. And so wide awake, got 255 joules of electricity.
Was that a good move or a bad move, Patrick?
That's a question I've been asked many times. And usually, especially the nurses want to know, would you do that again? You know, when I describe this at my keynotes, I would not do it again for fun, for sure. I might do it one more time if I knew it was going to reset things, you know, for me. So I would say if any of your listeners are ever in that situation as a practitioner or as a patient, make sure that there's some sort of guard in the patient's mouth. That's my only regret was, boy, my teeth slammed together in a way that had my tongue been between my teeth, I wouldn't be on a podcast probably today.
Patrick, as a Christian, faith plays a big role in your life. How did faith make a difference in you coming through this experience and even now and what you're doing now? This was a life-changing event for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it sure was. And I wish I could say that I woke up to everything I needed to wake up to, you know, the moment after it was cardioverted. Of course, even Paul on the road to Damascus, you know, the scales fall off, but doesn't mean you see everything clearly right away. Mm-hmm. So it took quite some time. And I would say, as far as my faith is concerned, it cut two ways. You know, first of all, I think for years it cut in a positive way, but leading towards some negative things where I had this deep sense of duty, calling, service to others. I want to love my community. And those are all really positive things. But within my personality, it led to overwork, obsession with what I was doing, you know, that sort of thing that I could justify because it's what God wants me to do, right? And so there was a balance there that I wasn't striking very well. And so actually I would say in some ways my faith paved that pathway to burnout. And then on the back side of it, I think when I was questioning my own performance, like, can I do this anymore? You know, I've done it successfully for so long. I've had, you know, great experience with this healthcare system, with my coworkers. Can I do it? You know, and then you ask the questions like, do I have any value if I can't do what I've been doing and finding the meaning that I've been finding in what I've been doing? And I think that's when just a return to the bedrock of the gospel that, you know, I have infinite value no matter what, mm-hmm. and that it's not my performance that ever earned me value in God's eyes. It was always just, you know, that feeling that God has about us is like we have when we see a newborn baby. You don't look at a newborn baby and say, yeah, but what will she do someday, you know, for us to really love her? You just look at her and you just love her. And so I think that was when I crashed, coming back to that foundational truth, you have infinite value just because you have value, was probably the most important thing for me.
Before we continue with this week's episode, here's a special announcement for you. We're excited to announce the newest addition to CMDA's long list of resources for our members, and it is specifically for students and residents. Called Standing Strong in Training, this new curriculum helps healthcare students and residents stand up against the cultural pressures facing Christians within healthcare today. The curriculum's 7 modules are designed for group settings, allowing attendees to solidify their foundational worldview beliefs regarding important issues, such as the beginning of life, end of life, and biblical sexuality. Each module also offers ideas of how to winsomely defend biblical values and positively interact with others in developing their worldview beliefs. For more information and to download this free resource, visit cmda.org/standingstrong. Time is running out to register for the 2025 CMDA National Convention in St. Charles, Missouri on May 1st through 4th. Sponsored by Samaritan's Purse, this is the premier event for healthcare professionals, residents, students, and spouses to gather in community together. Our guest speakers include Dr. Eric McLaughlin, Ryan Bomberger, Aaron Hawley, and more. We can't wait to gather together and for God to show us how we can each be a spoke in the wheel for Christ in healthcare. So reserve your spot now. For more information and to register, visit natcon.cmda.org. Let's jump right back into this week's episode.
You know, your story is about serving as a chaplain in a healthcare system. You've worked with a lot of disciplines across the healthcare field. What kind of patterns do you see developing in healthcare professionals in this area of burnout, especially for those who are focused on compassion?
Yeah, I think the best way I can illustrate that is by telling you about an experience that I've noticed at my keynotes. One of the recommendations I always make for people who are burned out is to create a bucket list. And so I started asking, you know, in these keynotes with all healthcare, a lot of nursing, a lot of physicians, you know, other disciplines, started asking, you know, how many of you, raise your hand if you've got a bucket list, and it'd be about 5 to 10%. And that's continued to be the case throughout all of my keynotes. It seems to be about 5 to 10%. So I assumed that's probably normal across the United States, is about 5 to 10% of people have a recorded bucket list. And then I looked into some of the studies that have been done on how many Americans have bucket lists, and they vary quite a bit, but they're between 40% and 90% is the result that they find of people in the general population who have a bucket list. So there's a disconnect between, and bucket list isn't the end all be all, but there's a disconnect between how many healthcare coworkers are prioritizing these are the things I want to do in life and I want to go after them versus the general population. And I think that pattern just demonstrates how the level of caring, the level of investment that our coworkers have, where they want to accomplish their mission, they want to serve their people, and they put everything else, including their own desires, on hold.
Well, what are some early warning signs? I mean, I know this, we've had a number of episodes over the last several years on the podcast talking about burnout and issues and the red alert that we've talked, RED, with the E being exhaustion. And that is so common among healthcare professionals, isn't it? And so, oh, I'm exhausted. Maybe I'm burnout. Well, that would be like every other day for some of my surgical colleagues and other specialists. But what are some early warning signs of burnout that Christian medical professionals should pay attention to, especially those who have this calling that we talked about when we first got started, and should say, uh-oh, and have some accountability folks in their lives, whether that's in the hospital or at home?
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, if we said just physical exhaustion, every healthcare coworker, especially those surgeons with those long days, you know, they're going to experience that. What we talk about, though, is emotional exhaustion, which is a different thing than physical exhaustion. So emotional exhaustion, the way I would describe an experience that a healthcare coworker might have where they really got to pay attention is you're taking a weekend off, you're taking a week off, maybe even after a medical leave or something like that. Examine how you feel coming back to work after some time off. Do you have energy at that point? You know, because now it's not physical, right? Hopefully you've had some rest. And of course, some of us take vacations where we're working harder even than when we're at our job. But hopefully you've had a little bit of rest. You've had some time away from work. That feeling when you're walking back into that facility, do you feel like, yeah, you know, I want to be here. This is what I want to be doing. I have some energy for it. If you lack any energy at that point, I think that's a real red flag. And then I think along with that, the other thing I would say is cynicism. You know, I think for a lot of your listeners, they probably got into healthcare for some very altruistic reasons. They want to serve, they want to help, they want to love, they want to heal. When cynicism takes over, and I'm not just sarcasm, you know, there's a lot of us in healthcare that are sarcastic, but that cynicism lives deeper, where at a soul level, I just don't think things are ever going to improve. This is awful, and it's just always going to be awful. And when I believe that at a soul level, so I think if there's somebody listening right now that is having that feeling of like when they come back to work after some time away, they have no energy, or they just feel that cynicism, that's something to pay attention to.
So what advice would you give to the leaders or those who have the ear of leaders in their healthcare systems who want to create environments where burnout is less likely to take hold?
Yeah, there's a long list of things I would say about that. But the first thing that comes to mind is there's a Gallup survey done recently that was aimed at getting at the opinions that coworkers have of how things are going for them at work. And so they've asked this question since 2009, and the results come out to one of three categories. Coworkers either feel like they're thriving, they're struggling, or they're suffering. And for years and years and years, there was a separation about 60-40, where about 60% of coworkers said, you know, I'm doing pretty well at work. 40% said they were struggling or suffering. The 2025 version of that, those trend lines have crossed. And so they've met in the middle. 50% of coworkers now say they're struggling or suffering. 50% say that they're thriving at work. And if we follow the trend line, they're crossing, and probably we could expect that in the next year or two, there's going to be more coworkers who say they're struggling or suffering than say that they're doing well at work. So I think for a leader to not assume that everybody's doing okay. In fact, quite the contrary, if we're to believe almost every survey that we're seeing right now, probably about half your coworkers are not doing well. The number one most important factor at work in any work environment, but particularly healthcare right now, is well-being. It just is. You know, people are, another Gallup survey showed that most people are looking for a new opportunity for work right now. And their number one factor is that place going to be better for work-life balance? Is it going to be better for my personal well-being? It actually ranks higher than a significant increase in benefits or in pay. So as a leader, I think asking yourself, like, how would I behave differently? How would I lead differently if I looked at my team and assumed they're probably, most of them are probably having a hard time?
Patrick, you have taken your experiences with burnout, and now you're traveling across the country, speaking in healthcare settings, conferences, and helping people through this crisis. Take us to one of your sessions, your keynote talks, and what kind of advice would you give our listeners to help them through if they're identifying with this, some of the things you're sharing today?
Yeah, I think the advice I would give is to say it takes time. You know, I said this at the end of a workshop one time, and someone said in the moment, you should have said that earlier. And that's that research shows, and experts say, recovery from a true place of burnout takes 1 to 3 years. It's not a quick fix. The reason for that is it's not just saying, oh, I'm going to work different hours, or I'm going to switch jobs. It lives in our hearts and our minds, this burnout. You know, when we talk about cynicism isn't a what are my tasks in my 9-to-5 job sort of question. It's related, but the cynicism, the emotional exhaustion, the questioning, is what I'm doing really mattering anymore? These are soul level. They're neurological. They're biological. They're habits. You know, I'd love to tell you that a year and a half after stepping aside finally from my leadership role in healthcare, that all of my habits are really healthy and I'm perfectly well, but it takes time. You know, it's not a switch of a not flipping of a switch. So I think that the hard truth is that it takes time. It takes 1 to 3 years for that full recovery.
Patrick, you speak to both secular as well as faith-based audiences, I'm sure, and then many times probably a mix. But what do you in particular, when you're with faith-based or Christian audiences, and of course those listening to this podcast, not only in the U.S. but around the world, what would you share with them? What spiritual challenge would you give them? What resources do they have available to them that our secular colleagues just can't go to the well over?
You know, there's only been one keynote really so far that's been with a faith-based group. And I ask this question because I think it gets at the heart of it. You know, which is more important when you read the Gospels, what's more important, Jesus or Jesus' mission? And I think, you know, it got at the heart of what we were talking about, because the group that I was talking with was coworkers from across from a large region for the YMCA, and they're working for the mission, the Christian mission. You know, it's on banners everywhere. They've got this great mission to impact their community. But I think sometimes as Christians, we behave as though the mission is more important than the person. And even when we look at the person of Jesus, Jesus had, certainly, I think most of us would agree, the most important mission, the most important objectives of any person that's ever walked the face of the planet. And yet he walked away. You know, he would step aside from that mission sometimes. He was days late in raising Lazarus. He didn't show up to the boat until the middle of the night. In another case, he falls asleep in the boat while they're having crisis. His brothers say, hey, you need to, if you really want to do this mission, you need to get down to Jerusalem and go to this festival. And he says, no, I'm good. I'm just going to stay here. They take him to the edge of a cliff and say, we're going to make you king. And he says, no, nope, that's not going to happen, and walks through the crowd. You know, Jesus valued, I think, his own well-being in a way that we don't. You know, we work 7 days. We stay on all the time. We think that our production is really where it's at, when Jesus seemed to actually model for us, no, you know, it's okay to take breaks. Go back to the creation story, right? God works for 6 days, rests on the seventh. And so I think modeling that, and then it comes down to a sentence, four words that I say to a lot of my coaching clients that I think resonates for a long time. It's just a job. Is it an important job? Yes. Are you expressing some of your Christian faith through that job? Yes. But at the end of the day, anything that you're doing for money is a job. And most of us are going to do that job for a while. Then we're going to step away from that job. And I think when it gets real complicated for us as Christians is when we tie our job together. Of course, Bert and I know pastors do this as much as healthcare professionals, maybe more, when we tie our job together with our identity, because it is just a job.
Patrick, I'm intrigued by that recent statement that you made, which is more important, Jesus or Jesus' mission. If we affirm that it is about Jesus, I'm just curious, what's the correlation that you're finding in the healthcare world for those who are Christians? Oftentimes, because of busyness, we spend less time with the Lord in prayer and in the Word. What's the correlation you're seeing, and from your experience, of how you can encourage our listeners today who are probably majority believers, who are busy, but to spend that time with the Lord and focus on Jesus, not just the mission that they're called to?
Yeah, I think sometimes we have to remember that spending that time with the Lord, spending that time in quiet, in retrospection, introspection, actually makes us better at our job. You know, so if you want to flip it on its head a little bit and say, okay, if I'm living my life like the most important thing is my performance at my job, if I really want that performance to be better, I've got to take care of my soul. Now, the self-care thing and the, like, you taking care of your soul is a little bit, there's some tension there, because it's the system usually that burns us out. So it's not fair to look at a good Christian doctor and say the reason you burned out was because you weren't taking good care of your soul. But it's a both, and the system is going to burn you out. And so you do have to take care of your soul in the process. So I think that's what I would say, is just to remember that that investment in your time with God and the time with yourself, you know, is actually going to make you a better practitioner too.
Patrick, tell us a little bit about your website and what kind of resources you have available, because I'm sure that after this conversation, some of our listeners are going to be wanting to hear a little bit more about your ministry and how they can get take advantage of some of your resources.
Yeah, I just encourage everybody to go to myburnouttest.com. It's a page on my site. Myburnouttest.com is going to give them an opportunity to take a quick screening. It's going to give them some instant results, like what's my risk for burnout right now based on a lot of different factors. And then once they're on the website, they can see the other information about keynotes, workshops, and other resources.
Mike, we care a lot about our members here at CMDA. And a lot who are going through this issue right now. And so I encourage our listeners not only to check out Patrick's site, but to reach out to us here at cmda.org/wellbeing or coaching@cmda.org. And our team here, I personally would love to kind of help any way we can to help our listeners today go through this. Patrick, thank you for taking time with us this morning.
Absolutely. Thanks for the invitation.
What a timely and encouraging conversation with Reverend Patrick Reiki. His story is a powerful reminder that burnout, it just isn't the end of your calling. It may actually be God's invitation into a new beginning and a deeper walk with Him. As Christian healthcare professionals, we often push through fatigue and isolation or spiritual dryness, believing it's just part of the job and our call to serve. And by the grace of God, I personally have never experienced a period of burnout, but wow, a number of my teammates and colleagues around me sure have. These are warning signs, this fatigue, isolation, spiritual dryness. They're warning signs we can't afford to overlook. We are not meant to carry the weight of this calling alone. We need, friends, accountability and community and support to stay grounded in Christ. We need to prioritize our wellness and continue serving faithfully without burning out. That is one role that our CMDA National Ministry takes very seriously. If you are feeling overwhelmed or depleted, take that first step toward renewal. And if you're in a season of burnout already, please, friends, don't go it alone. We would be honored to walk with you through this particular season. CMDA offers confidential coaching, spiritual support, and wellness resources tailored just for healthcare professionals. You can learn more by going to cmda.org/wellbeing or reach out directly by emailing my co-host from today, Pastor Burt Jones, at his rather unique and memorable email address, pbj@cmda.org. I want you to remember, God is not finished with your story, and there is hope for restoration ahead. You can also visit Patrick Reiki's website, and you can access his free burnout quiz that he referred to and explore the resources that can help you regain balance and purpose. We've got that website URL for you in our show notes today. If you enjoyed today's episode, please don't forget, as I remind you each week, to follow CMDA Matters on socials, subscribe to the podcast, leave us a review, and share this episode with others who just might need encouragement today. For those seeking support or to recharge, CMDA's National Convention, it offers a perfect opportunity to do so. Join us May 1st through the 4th in St. Charles, Missouri, where over 1,000 Christian healthcare professionals will gather along with their spouses and friends to enjoy heartfelt community, to sharpen their understanding of our current cultural moment, and stand strong for biblical truth. Whether you're navigating burnout, as we've talked about today, or simply seeking to deepen your faith and practice, NatCon provides a space for both growth and renewal. You know, thanks to our generous sponsors for National Convention, Samaritan's Purse and Liberty University College of Osteopathic Medicine, we're welcoming an amazing lineup of speakers and offering over 10 hours of continuing education and 50-plus breakout sessions. Plus, the 8th annual CMDA VIE poster session will feature incredible student and resident research. You don't want to miss it. If it's actually your first time attending our convention, you'll receive $100 off registration. Secure your spot now by going to natcon.cmda.org. And friends, let's make this year's national convention the best one yet. Maybe you can't join us in person. Well, we have a virtual conference registration that's now open. While it's not quite the same, of course, as being there with us in person, it is a great alternative to experience the main plenary sessions live as they happen. And we've got a gracious host for you this year. Dr. Julie Rose will be right there, making it a unique experience for you if you attend virtually. As we look forward to next week's podcast, I'm excited to welcome Dr. Gregory Sund. He is a highly dedicated anesthesiologist and head of the anesthesia department at AIC Kajabi Hospital in my former home of Kenya, because he recently received the Lakheim Prize of $500,000 to advance anesthesia training in East Africa. Dr. Sund has spent over a decade improving anesthesia care and training in Kenya and Burundi and beyond. You won't want to miss this inspiring conversation, so please tune in a week from now. Bringing the hope and healing of Jesus Christ to the world through committed Christ followers in healthcare, that is what matters to us at CMDA, and for us at CMDA Matters. May you recognize this week that the Lord is with you and that He is for you to do His good work. Thanks for listening today, and we'll see you next time, Lord willing, on CMDA Matters.
Thanks for listening to CMDA Matters. If you would like to suggest a future guest or share a comment with us, please email cmdamatters@cmda.org. And if you like the podcast, be sure to give us a 5-star rating and share it on your favorite social media platform. This podcast has been a production of Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members, and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.